back, everyone, to But Why Though, the podcast. Today we are doing a spoiler review of Netflix's newest Marvel series, The Punisher. As always, I'm your host, Kate, and I'm here with Adrian.
Hey, how's it going?
And Matt.
Hello.
So to start things off, let's talk about what our expectations for The Punisher were going into this. Adrian?
So if you've listened to our Punisher episode, there's a lot of stuff with the character that we really don't get in Daredevil 2, obviously, because it's not a Punisher show. So I just wanted them to flesh out, like, the things that make Daredevil important, like, you know, i.e., like, his military background, you know, a little more into why he's doing the things that he's doing, and just giving, like, a compelling villain, because a lot of the times he's just kind of, like, destroying criminal enterprises. So I just wanted them just to take the comic book and put it on screen. So I had pretty high expectations like going into it.
Matt?
My expectations, I mean, I was kind of really excited for this, I guess. I definitely was like kind of agree with Adrian. I wanted a more rounded out, like, find out why he's doing this and why he is the way he is. Because I think I said as in the Punisher episode, or even that when we talk about him a little bit, Daredevil type, is he just seemed like find guy, kill guy, and there was nothing else to that. And so I kind of wanted more of this whole, like, I guess, reasoning why.
Yeah, for me, one of the things that I really, I guess, put it for high expectations is I wanted them to be able to show the mental trauma that Frank has that puts him in that position. And I didn't want it to be something that was just like a flash in the pan and then it's never focused on again. And being able to show that type of trauma experience and revisiting is really hard in shows a lot of times, because flashbacks and stuff sometimes feel really heavy-handed or don't work. So I wanted to walk away from the show feeling like I understood Frank inside and out, which I think is pretty similar to you guys. Going into it, for this review, I think the easiest thing to do is to just talk about the characters and some of the situations they're in. The season itself plays out. He's finished his mission to kill the people associated with his family's death, and then he finds out, nope, there are actually more people involved in this, and it runs a lot deeper than it should. And so for Frank as a character, I want to talk about him first, because I think personally the scene that sits with me from here, like, the most, like, from the series, because it is, it surpasses Daredevil hallway fight scene for me, is the sledgehammer fight in episode 1. Like, it is the best scene to me out of any Marvel show.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I don't know if it's, I don't know if I like it more than, like, the hallway scene in the first Daredevil, because that scene is just ridiculous. But this one was, like, just, like, viscerally, I was like, oh, I'm not watching any, I'm not, like, this isn't the other Marvel shows. This is different. This is way different. So I like how they set it up really, really early on in the show that, you know, you're getting something different, and buckle up, Buttercup.
So as far as the Daredevil scene, I totally don't think it's better than the hallway scene at all. But being biased, I don't know. But I did really like that at least the show ends with, like, something happened, because that first episode does go on, like, very slow. And you're, like, waiting for anything to happen. And then all of a sudden, when it happens, it happened. Definitely violent.
Yeah, like, I think for me, like, that scene itself, the music it's set to is insane, because it fits everything perfectly. And you're right, Adrian, like, the visceral nature of it gives you an insight to Frank, because when he comes back, like, the entire middle part of this episode is, like you said, Matt, like, really, really slow, because you're getting a Frank that is just doing his job. He literally steps into his job, tears down walls, and that's it. And he's trying to move past, or at the very least forget, all of the stuff that he's been through before and what he's done after. And in that scene, you see just Frank break loose, like the song. And you see him become the Punisher again. And I think, for me, that's my favorite Frank scene. I think there are other great scenes from the episodes, but that, like, the entire first episode, you get him fighting against himself and just trying to forget and move on everything that he's going through. And then you have the moment with that sledgehammer. I wouldn't even call it a fight because they don't put up much of a fight. But that sledgehammer moment where he does give in and realizes what he's supposed to do. Like, he sees something and he can't let it go. This kid has gotten into trouble. He's started making friends with this kid and he's pulled into protecting him and killing the people who are trying to kill that kid. And I think for him, like, he's not somebody who just watches. He has to act. And I think that that is a really core part to who Frank is and where you see him taken throughout the series. So for me, that's one of my favorite Frank moments and gives us kind of an understanding of how he is and why he's reactive to things. Do you all, like, how do you all think Frank was shown over the entire series, and what other parts, like, what else did the showrunners do to show different sides of Frank, or like what your favorite parts were?
For me, I think my biggest moment that kind of encapsulates his character is towards the end. You know, when he's like on the verge of death and his wife is there and she's saying, you know, it's time to go home. And then he makes that decision of where home is. And man, if that didn't just hit me right in the gut when, you know, he says home at the end of the episode, it's so good. Because his whole season, he's struggling with, you know, could he have been like the family man that he needed to be? You know, like, is he like the monster? And I think like that monster struggle is way more believable and so much better than they do in like Daredevil. Of like, oh, father, I have sinned, blah, 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 because I just want to go beat up bad guys. But like, this was like an internal struggle of like, you know, he did stuff that got his family killed. He wanted to be good for his family, but he just really couldn't. And this is like him accepting it and just like fully, I think that's the moment where he fully engages in Punisher mode and becomes, you know, the Punisher fully in that moment. That's my favorite moment, I think, of like the whole show, to be honest. Just 'cause I'm putting myself in Frank's shoes, and I think that's, you know, the best characters are the human characters that you can put yourself in into their shoes.
Yeah.
And that's such a tough moment that I don't know what I would have chosen, you know, had that been, you know, Stefani, you know, telling me to come home, you know, in that similar situation.
Yeah, so I do like both of those scenes a lot, and I think they definitely, like, I guess, encase his character, especially one that Adrian was talking about. And I guess just to add on to a different scene that I really like is obviously probably at the very end, when basically he basically smashes Billy Russo's face through a glass for like 5 minutes straight, which apparently you cannot find a gift of that no matter how hard you try. But I really like that because, one, he just basically keeps him alive. Because out of all the movies, he kills everybody. And then, like I said, he kind of finally embraces it with that whole, like, home scene. And then in this one instance, the one person that you would think he would want to kill the very, very most, he says, no, I'm going to leave him to rot and be basically completely miserable and basically have no face, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I think that that's really powerful. Because I think he also mentions earlier on in the season, too, where he's, like, not killing is hard. And that's just for him, like, not killing the soldiers on the base that he's trying to infiltrate. And, like, to not kill the person that has literally just doomed everything.
Right.
Is intense.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's, like, a perfect way to, like, subtly set up, you know, season two. With, you know, Billy Russo becoming Jigsaw. Like, that that is good. Like, I like that so much better than just, you know, just introducing a character as Jigsaw. Like, this movie was this series was as much as, like, you know, Frank Castle coming into the Punisher as Billy Russo coming into being Jigsaw. So I think you kind of have to do that.
Which, can I say, as much as I think we all have mentioned at some point or another that we're tired of origin stories, I'm not tired of Marvel Netflix origin stories, because they're good. they're really good.
Yeah, it was really good.
I am tired of the whole subplot of we need to think one guy's the main bad guy, but it's really another guy, and then the other guy dies, and then lo and behold, the lower guy's actually the main bad guy.
This is very true.
Which, once again, happened in this formula.
Yeah.
Even though they do it so well, though.
I do want to say, like, to Adrian's point about that home scene, like, and it's kind of, like, shifts gears so we can talk a little bit about Frank in the military, but, like, that entire thread of him dealing with his family and getting those snapshots where you, like, his situation with his wife unfolds into where you see that this isn't actually a happy home, necessarily. It's a home that is struggling from, you know, her husband and their father being constantly deployed and feeling like, and Frank not being able to navigate, like, do I belong over there or do I belong here? Do I want the fighting or do I want my family? And I think that at least from what, like, my uncle has talked about coming back from Vietnam and stuff, like, that ability to transition into a place of being home once you've seen so much or done so much on the battlefield, like, that is hard. And it takes a really big mental toll. And I think, I don't think I've seen another example of that in media that has made it, like, just hit me in my heart so hard and make me understand that the way that the Punisher does.
Yeah, because this whole time, like, the way he, like, obsesses about his family and do all this stuff, you'd think they were just, like, the most loving family at all. And then by the end of it, you're kind of questioning, like, or at least I was, like, was he even actually a good husband or even father? Because they show parts where you can tell that the military parts and his whole war background sometimes get to him, and he, like, almost, like, snaps. Normally snap, yeah. But it has a little, like, jumps.
Yeah, you can definitely see he's trying, especially, like, in, like, the fairy scene where he snaps on his kid.
Oh,
yeah,
that was intense.
Yeah.
And just knowing people...
You can see he's trying, but he's just, you know, half of him is here, half of him's not.
Yeah, it's just...
Which I think is dope.
Yeah, no, it's just kind of hard to... Because you would just think the way, especially the whole idolization that he has of this whole fantasy, that it was a totally different way.
Nah. I will say, like, despite, you know, the obvious problems with, you know, his home relationship, thank you to these writers for not, like, pigeonholing him into, like, another relationship with, like, Karen Page or, like, even a little bit of Sarah Lieberman. Like, that would have been such a bad and, like, undercutting of everything you're trying to get across with his character by doing that. So
I'm
so glad they didn't do that.
Like, I think they hinted it, but I think you're right. Like, they didn't sit him down with them. Like, nobody means anything to him because the mission means everything to him.
Well, you can see that they start to mean something to him as the show progresses, which is nice. So, I mean, I guess obviously if you get into, like, maybe if it's like, season 3 or 4, you can see down the line. Yeah. But definitely didn't do it anything, like, within the show to take out any of the whole, as you say, like, origin part of it.
Yeah, I guess I mean, like, you don't have that romance right off the bat.
Right.
Yeah. He doesn't mean
like, he straight up curves her, like, in the elevator when she's, like, trying to get all kissy. And he's like, just take the gun.
Yeah.
Girl, get out of here. Come on.
Yeah.
Do you know who I am?
I think ultimately one of my favorite things that I can take away from this is, as much as I do think Frank is the Punisher and Frank is aware he's the Punisher, I think that he's, like, that the series itself is also very aware that Frank is just doing his mission and everybody else, like, he's the Punisher to everybody else, but to him, he's Frank. Like, this is an ingrained part of who he is, and it's not separate, which he becomes, and to him, like, the Punisher is a symbol for everything else.
I would think that maybe at the beginning, but I just feel like towards the middle, towards, like, the last end.
Like, he embraces it.
Yeah, because basically he literally repaints the entire Punisher, like, logo and armor and everything. And then I think he just totally comes and knows it's actually a symbol and knows this is who he is and just kind of gives up. Not really necessarily gives up Frank part, as an old Frank, like, life that kind of does, but he definitely, like, more of this whole, like, take on this persona.
So, like, he comes to terms with Frank and understands that, like,
because especially, like, especially when they know they're coming after him, he's like, I am Punisher, come get me. This is my persona, and it's intimidating and everything else.
Yeah. I think it's like he fully engages that when he doesn't go, like, have dinner with him at the end. And he's like, nah, man.
Yeah.
Come on, bro. We're not here anymore.
So, I guess, like, moving on from Frank, and I think obviously, like, we can talk about some of the scenes and turning points in the series, because I think talking about the military support group subplot that happens is also really important, but I think it deserves, like, its own time outside of characters. So, like, moving on to, like, more characters, I think the next one that comes up is going to be Mindani. Like, I really liked her a whole bunch. So she is the special agent who's whose partner was killed in the drug ring that Frank was involved with, and has eventually, and that led to the death of his family and to the death of everyone involved and beyond that. No, she's not an FBI agent. She's a Homeland Security agent. That's what she is. And I think her arc is actually really well done too, because I've mentioned it before, I don't like romances, but I liked that her and Billy, as much as she liked Billy, I thought that it was more sexual than anything else. And there's this scene after Billy kills her partner where she's crying in the bathtub, and I'm like hurting, and I wanted to yell at the screen because of how intense that was. And her character falls, and she falls hard, and then she like gets up and stays with the stays on the right side. And she's not going to let her feelings for Frank, she's going to bring Frank in, and she's going to let him go when she needs to, but she's ultimately, like, she's going to stay good throughout. Like, she's never once kind of, like, tested by Billy. Like, is she going to fall in love with Billy and be on his side and capture Frank? Like, that's not really a thing that's there.
Well, I don't think she ever actually is given a reason to ever do that, though.
Yeah.
I mean, she literally only finds out about Billy because Billy basically stabbed her partner to death. There's no, like, actual conflict of, like, a point to where, like, Billy could be like, you know, come to my side or look at this side. It's more of, there's only two extremes by that point.
Well, I think when they're in the stairwell, I don't think she, like, that's when she realizes it. But I think that for a moment she is on Billy's side a little bit. And then she realizes that, well, actually, she puts the pieces together.
I don't know if she's ever actually on Billy's side. As per se, she's just on the lost side of what's going on.
Okay. So, like, she would be, like, that neutral force.
Yes, because the whole time she is talking about the law, and everybody's trying to cover up everything or shove stuff under the rug, and she's like, justice, almost, at some point, at least for me, it gets annoying, because she does tend to get in the way sometimes.
Yeah.
But no, I don't think there's ever, like, her even flipping to Billy's side, because I don't think she was even close to Billy's side. It's more of it was just...
Well, that's the thing, though, because like, I guess the reason I think about that is because it's always, like, it seems to be a plot point when a female character is in love with a bad character. That bad character, there's usually a subplot where that bad character is trying to use them and get them on their side. So the fact that that's not a question for her morality, I like that, if that makes sense.
I didn't ever see any of that happen, though.
Well, I'm saying I like that did not happen.
Oh.
Because that's usually what happens when you have a neutral or a good character paired with a bad character.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm saying I'm happy that didn't happen. Although their sex scenes are really intense.
Yes.
I mean, I thought she was okay. I mean, she didn't do a whole lot for me, to be honest.
Yeah, but how I felt, honestly.
Just because she feels like Misty Knight. Like, it's the same thing. Like, over again for Misty Knight.
Yeah, I
can
see
that. That is a great
example. Independent, cop doing the right thing, and she's there to challenge the hero's, way of doing things, and she's not going to take no shit from nobody, which isn't, like, a bad thing. Like, I like Misty Knight, but it's just, like, the same thing over again.
Okay, I could see that.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I could really see that. Yeah, I still think I still like the way they show her dealing with the bureaucratic end of stuff, where she's having to go through all the red tape and she's having to answer to people who obviously do not respect her, and I really like that side. But yeah, you're right. Actually, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, no, I mean
she is exactly Misty Knight.
Yeah, the way she plays out is good and everything else, but the whole Misty Knight comparison and
her role.
Yeah, her role thing. I just don't care for that at all. Like, I didn't like Misty Knight. Annoyed me quite a bit, especially in the Defenders. So,
and she was kind of a dick to Homeboy, for no reason.
What are you talking about?
Literally, her partner.
Oh, yeah.
Like, literally the only person in that department who,
that's nice.
Cared.
Yeah.
And she was just kind of a dick to him. And then, when he dies, then it's my partner died. But, you were a dick to him almost entirely up to that point.
Like, I see that.
Almost entirely.
Yeah, no, I completely agree there. But I guess also I kind of see it as, she's kind of disrespected by literally everybody around her, so her first reaction is to be that way to everybody. Like, whether they're... and it's a character flaw, right? Like, it's the fact that, like, she can't let anybody get into that space because she automatically has her wall up.
Well, I mean, you can see that at the beginning, but then, like, even towards, like, the...
I don't think she was a dick when they found the bug. Mm. I think at that point she had started changing.
Yeah, but that wasn't until, like, episode, like, 5 or 6.
I know.
To have, like, that's half the season.
Yeah, I thought she was just kind of mean. Yeah. Damn. I was like, hey, man.
I guess I just don't see a problem like, with it.
You're mean to him, but because Billy Russo's hot, you're going to go...
Yeah, pretty much.
Be all nice to him. And he makes that point. Yes. Like,
yeah, that's true.
Like, he makes that point in the show. And I'm like, this is completely right. Like, you are such an asshole for being mean to him. Just because, like, if he looked like Billy Russo, I guarantee you she would not have been a dick to him.
Yep.
That is true.
And that's fucked up.
I can't argue against that.
I don't like that.
I can't argue against that. But I will say that she was just using Billy for sex a lot of the time. Which I was okay with.
Yeah, but she also, like, shared her plans and shit with Billy.
She shared more with Billy than she did with her own partner.
That is true.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like,
God damn it, Mandani.
All you gotta do is be hot and women fall to you, man.
Well, that's the problem. That's why Billy Russo ends up being the way he is, because he's the hottest man on the show. Not even hottest man, hottest person on the show. Yeah. So, next up, I would say Micro, the handy-dandy sidekick who is tortured in a chair for a little bit before he becomes the sidekick. For me, personally, I liked him. I didn't like a lot of his choices.
Like, which ones?
I just don't like a lot of the choices he made with his family, and then just kind of getting mad at Frank for being around his family when it's kind of like, I know you made the choice to save them, so please don't get mad at Frank for constantly checking up on them.
I don't think he was ever really...
Well, he also checks up on them, like, when he doesn't ask him to.
Yeah, this is true. That is true.
I was like, I don't think it was that.
Only knows because he is watching over them very, very...
How can he not get mad? Like, how can you watch your wife basically, like, have a crush on this dude? Like, a very apparent crush on Frank.
Yeah.
And then, like, just be... I'd be pissed, too.
I mean, but then he's Frank. I honestly think that's why I didn't have a problem with it, because I'm like, he's Frank. He's John Bernthal, like, and you're Micro.
I liked his character, because I think he's, like, I mean, the whole reason he's there is to be the other side of, like, the coin, basically, like.
The one that refuses to kill.
Yeah, like, basically, like, the same things, more or less, you know, things could have happened to either of them, and he just took it in a different way than Frank did, where Frank went to go kill literally everybody, you know. David Lieberman kind of went the tech route and, like...
Killed himself,
basically. So I think they're different sides of different coins, or different sides of the same coin, which I like, because I can see myself being in both of those shoes, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I like it.
Yeah, no, I really like him, and I don't even know if it's per se that he's not, like, against killing, because, I mean, there's points in the show where Frank goes, we have to kill him, and he's like, that sounds good to me.
Well, I mean, like, he's against killing himself. Like, that seems... Because, like, there are times that, like, Frank gives him the gun, and he's just like, I can't do it. If that makes sense. Like, himself won't pull the trigger. Like, I think that's, like, an important distinction. Like, you can be okay with killing, but pulling the trigger yourself is something that's entirely different. Which I think is why you end up needing it.
But I mean, how many situations was he really in to where he needed to kill somebody?
He was behind a computer a lot of the time.
I guess that was my...
Yeah, I know, but you can tell it bothers him, though, because, like, when he first says, like, all right, you know, under one stipulation, like, they all die, you can kind of see, like, in his face, he's like, is this really what I wanted? Like, do I really want them to die? But then he's like, well, I can't argue with Frank Castle. Like, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Which I think is, like, a better way of handling it than, like, Karen Page trying to, like, change how this guy is. I think he accepts that Frank is just a badass and is just going to do whatever the hell he wants anyway.
The only thing I will say about Karen Page, since you brought her up, is that Karen Page should be Ben Urich in this entire thing.
Well, are we not going to talk about Karen Page's role?
She's so annoying.
Okay, yeah, we can talk about Karen Page's role. I don't like her. Yeah, okay.
Well, basically, I was saying, because you said no situations, when he does get in a situation for his family, like when Frank does challenge him, he does always seem to go up there whether he likes it or not. And so, like, even though he did, like, kind of... No, because he actually didn't sell himself out at first, or sell Frank out, but when they faked his death. But he seemed to always, like, I just want to say, even rise to the occasion, even if it's probably like half terrible, because you know he has no skills in this whatsoever.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think he does end up talking to him.
They both love their families, but they just handle how they're going to get their job done in just different ways.
Which I think is why they have that falling out. Like, they're falling out when Micro goes to Madani and wants to go to Madani to get that extra help that he knows. Like, I think, too, like, Micro is aware that they need help, whereas Frank is not. Like, Frank is very set on doing it himself and not, like...
Yeah.
I mean, and rightfully so. Like, Frank has no reason to trust anybody. I also think the fact that he saves Madani also points out that Frank isn't just, like, this mindless killer. Like, I think that's the first point where the show really, like, highlights the fact that, like, Frank isn't just going to kill random people. And he's going to also save people. This is a
complete aside, but God damn it. Stop ruining classic cars for your goddamn entertainment. That's literally my dream car. They just blew it up. The bastards blew it up. And I was like, oh, is it necessary? You could have just put her like in a new Mustang and just blew that shit up. No. You have to blow up all the classics. Sorry. I just hate that in movies. I hate it.
Don't you like Fast and the Furious?
Yeah, but like they blow up one car, like a classic car. That's because Vin Diesel's the only one who drives a classic car in that show. And then they rebuild it, so it's okay.
You never know, they might be rebuilding it. But, no, because, yeah. That's about all I really had for...
Okay. So who do you want to talk about next, Karen?
Yeah, I guess you can move into Karen.
Okay, because I don't think there's a lot about her. But what there is, I don't like. Because I don't like Karen Page. I personally think that they... And I didn't... I honestly, when we watched the first season of Daredevil, Matt pointed this out, that, like, Ben Urich is, like, really important, and then they just kill him. And there are a lot of points in this story where Karen is having to talk to people and, like, having to talk to Frank, and I just keep thinking, I think Ben Urich in these scenes would have been a lot better than having Karen in these scenes. Because I think Ben would understand it at a deeper level. And Karen, she's annoying. She talks and I'm annoyed.
Yeah, like the same problems I have with her in basically everything, all the other shows, is the problems I have with her here. Like, she's just pretentious. She's just overly pretentious and I hate it. Like, stop trying to be holier than thou and change Frank for how he is. I totally love when he was like, all right, if you're not going to help me, then fuck off then. Like, yeah. I don't need your help then. Like, didn't beg, didn't, like, try to, like, plead with her. He's like, fuck it, I'll go do this shit myself then. Like, I don't need your help here. Because she's just so pretentious trying to change Frank. And, like, I hate, like, that plot of, like...
Her moral speeches?
Her moral speeches and just, like, trying to fix everybody when this chick killed a dude and we never talked about it. Like, you're not... Now you're a concealed carry person when you're mad at Frank for shooting people. Like, come on. You're not, the best person to be talking shit. And I just don't like her character.
Yeah, for one, I still hate that they killed off Ben Urich, especially the fashion they did. And it's, like, the most useless death and the most unwarranted death of the entire Daredevil season one. And it didn't make no sense, especially since all they did was replace him with Karen Page. But now apparently she's good, despite having zero experience doing any of this. And then basically kind of with Adrian thing, like, it still bugs me every time she shows up on screen and she even talks as, you killed somebody. And it's never been addressed throughout four different shows of four seasons of seeing her.
Yeah.
And you're going to go on this talking to Frank about morality and other people about morality and you're bad while you're carrying a gun and you killed somebody.
Yeah. Because, like, I know somebody, I had put that on Twitter when I was watching it, and somebody was like, but it was self-defense. I was like, I don't care if it's self-defense. Address it. Use it. If you want Karen to say, hey, I don't like killing, because guess what? I've killed once. I had to kill somebody to save myself, and I didn't like doing it, and these are the implications of that. And you want to have her talk from that perspective and use her trauma? Okay. But they don't do any of that. They just have her doing, like, these long moral soliloquies about how you shouldn't kill anybody, Frank.
All I know is at this point, despite her killing somebody in the first season of Daredevil, which was the first Marvel Netflix show, Daredevil, or Matt Murdock, what's his name? Foggy, Frank, anybody she's worked with in Luke Cage from the from the Defenders thing, do not know that she's actually ever killed anybody, despite all of that. Claire, nobody.
Yeah.
You mean you see her a little bit in that part, and you thought it was going to be this huge part in season two of Daredevil, since he was dealing with morality clauses, in which all she did was talk about giving everything up and whatever. You killed somebody.
Yeah.
Then you shot him multiple times. I mean, much as self-defense, I'm pretty sure the last three bullets were all like, I enjoy this.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
it wasn't like one bullet. Agree. She unloaded the entire clip into the guy.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I think a lot of that, I genuinely think a lot of keeping her on was like, oh, we don't want to have another dude. Now Karen's a chick and she's here and she can build up this romantic stuff with, you know, with Matt and everything. And I'm just like, that's so stupid. Ben would benefit Ben could lend so much more to these stories. Specifically in The Punisher. Like, this is the first time that I've seen stuff. I haven't liked her, but in The Punisher, I'm like, you're actually a detriment to this stuff because I think Ben Urich would have been a lot better handling these situations. And a lot of it has to do with a lot of the dialogue she delivers about the integrity of the press, finding the truth, and helping people. And I'm like, that is Ben.
No, at least she said it because I literally felt the only reason they kept her was because she's a female. Put her.
Yeah, no, I genuinely think that's what it was. I think somebody at Marvel was like, hey, we are obviously green.
What, Marvel would do that?
Oh, they do it a lot. I think my whole thing
here. It was a showrunner. He specifically wanted her in the, like, he specifically asked, like, if he could write her into the story, the main showrunner guy. I saw an article about it when I was, like, angry about this. When I watched the show.
And I mean, I know we're making a big deal about Ben Urich, but anybody that's ever read Daredevil or knows anything about Daredevil, Ben Urich plays a huge part in all of Daredevil's, or at least most of Daredevil's, like, I guess, whatever you want to call them.
Stories.
Hey, I was waiting for one of you to come bust out this fancy word or something.
Stories?
Yeah. Yeah, let's move away from her, because she sucks.
Yeah.
Should we talk about actual Billy?
Billy. Yeah, let's talk about Billy first. Billy's pretty.
That's all we find out this whole time.
You don't find Billy's out anything dick. Until, like, the episodes later. That, like, until way, way at the end that Billy's anything other than pretty and following orders. And then there's, like, a distinct switch where he is literally Frank if Frank had no moral grounding.
Yeah, and was a dick.
Yeah. Well, Frank's already kind of a dick.
I don't think Frank would... Oh, I guess I'd say, like, moral surrounding, but, like, he killed that dude and then went and fucked her.
Yeah.
That is so fucked.
That's chaotic evil. It's so like that. Fucked. That is the evilest of the evil.
But we forgot as much as that. Like, they do show the scene of his presumed mother.
Oh yeah.
Oh my
he's
god,
a
Matt,
dick.
Talk
I
about
was
that,
like,
please. Talk about that, please.
I don't know what was going on there. So, I was like, what the? This is weird.
So I had to. My idea is like a background of what.
Yes.
So one. When I was looking up, because I always get bored, I look up Billy Russo to see where they actually took a character from, like an unknown or like small-time character and built him up, or if they just kind of made a new character, because some of the characters in these shows, usually one or two of them are like a newly made character, and usually one or two of them are just kind of redone. And so I looked up Billy Russo, and they basically said that he was basically a wife beater, and he was like torturing his mom and all this stuff, and dad was like messed up in an abusive household. It's like, wow, this makes no sense from this. Until they show this one clip at the very beginning of the show, which apparently he has his mom, like, sedated in a mental hospital, locked away. His actual parents, who apparently, I think she's the one that put him up for adoption.
Yeah.
And he found him and basically has her sitting in a mental hospital being sedated and, like, not really tortured, but pretty much.
Oh, he tortures her.
Like, mentally tortured, not, like, really physically, per se, tortures her.
I think trapping somebody in a bed is physical torture.
Well, I know she's strapped down and like sedated and stuff, but he's not like, sitting there beating her. Basically, he like shows up just so she can see him.
Yeah.
And then talking to her like, hey, I love you or something like that, and then literally leaves.
And I see that, and you can tell that it's like a ritual of him. Like, I personally think that is a really big form of torture. Not physical, because he's not like beating her legs as she's like in a bed. But I think beyond, like, for him, this goes into that. It's the exact same reason why he goes and has sex with Madani after he kills her partner. Because it's all about that power and control factor of these people. And I totally see him as being a wife beater if you put him in a romantic situation.
But it's also weird because up to this point, they've given you no reason the show to not like him.
And yeah, it's the like first they, point.
Yeah, I think they literally, I mean, not that it's not that important to his character per se, but I almost feel like they, it doesn't seem forced, but they put it in here because it almost, at the point, you're almost like thinking Billy Russo's a good guy, whether he was good or bad, and you kind of like him, and he's a pretty face, and they had to give you at least some context of reason, like, this is actually a bad guy.
Yeah, like, this isn't what you think it is. Like, things look different.
Because even towards, I mean, besides, like, the bathroom scene, which is obviously very, very disturbing, there's still, by the end, you're like, maybe this guy, you know, like, you could almost, like, cheer for the guy at some point because he's literally not, like, you understand somewhat where he's coming from. I do, because he talks about, basically, it's just literally, he's alone. He doesn't have any family connections. He was abandoned at birth. I mean, he basically does it all for the money. It's no personal connections whatsoever. And so
they have to show you that this isn't a guy you root for.
Yeah, you got to show him that he's more than just a mercenary per se, because some people don't mind your mercenary type.
Yeah. Adrian?
I don't hear you.
You're mute.
Fuck. Yeah, like, his character's just a dick. Like, you're supposed to hate him. Like, I don't know, man. And maybe I just never liked it. I can just tell something was off. Something was afoot.
Is he too pretty?
Something was afoot. And then that scene with his mom was just messed up. Like, just crazy. He just does just messed up stuff, like, the entire time. They try to set him up as being, like, you know, I'm getting out because I don't want to do this no more. But I was like, nah, this dude's sketchy.
I actually think next to Kilgrave, Billy Russo creeps me out the most on, like, the people I don't want to meet factor from the villains. And that just has to do with the fact that, like, I think Billy Russo is a lot in the ways, like, he is kind of Kilgrave-y in the fact that it's that power over a situation that he craves and he wants. And he will, like, the things that he does to remind himself that he has power in those situations. Like, next to Jessica Jones, like, some of the stuff in that show, I've never really been too uncomfortable watching the Netflix shows, except for that scene when he's washing her in the bathtub after he kills her partner and everything. Like, that was just, oh my god, this dude is extra rapey and person-beating and, like, just, like, a terrible person. And you can tell that he's getting off on having that power over everybody in those situations. It's
basically,
it's
they knocked it out of the park with his goddamn character.
Yeah,
basically.
He did. It's terrifying.
Because when they first started, I was like, are they, like, when is this dude going to do some fucked up shit? I knew, like, you know, Billy Russo, like, this dude's going to be Jigsaw at some point.
Yeah.
Where's the fucked up stuff? Where's his father abuse stuff coming from? And then they just hit you with a truck with all of it. And I'm like, yep, this is what I wanted.
Yeah.
This is the villain that I'm supposed to hate and not supposed to like.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm down with it.
Yeah.
It's sad because there are moments where I still like you. Like, even, like, when he gets, when Frank gets tortured and he just basically lets Frank just beat this guy.
Oh, yeah.
He has these moments where you kind of, like, okay, guy. Like, you have this sense of, like, what he's for. Even when he lets, I can't remember the guy live.
It's for power, though. Like,
I know it is.
Like, the only reason that he lets Frank beat that, the CIA agent to death is because that dude was trying to assert himself over him. And he was like, you know what? No. I'm going to clip these things. I'm going to stab Frank. You know, you just stab Frank with some adrenaline, or you're going to stab Frank with some adrenaline. Now he's going to beat the crap out of you. Like, it is so it's so good. Like, that actor is so good. And him and Kilgrave are the most terrifying people for me in the entire Marvel Netflix
universe.
But he has
that personality where he could walk up to anybody and anybody's going to like him.
That's how Kilgrave is.
Yeah.
Like, that, like, yeah. That to me is terrifying. Like, that level of that level of megalomania and ability to abuse somebody is terrifying to me. And, like, he's a great villain.
It's bad, for Marvel. It's disturbing, but it's totally fascinating to me, and he's probably my favorite character out of this whole show.
No, I think,
and if, I don't know if that says
I don't think it's wrong, because, like, I think that the way they wrote him, they make you conflicted about who he is, what he's doing, and, like, I honestly think this proves my point from our Marvel Netflix episode. the villains are some of the best parts of these shows. They write great villains. Like, I'm still rooting for Mariah over anybody else in Luke Cage. So, I think that Marvel as a franchise has a lot of weak villains. Marvel as a Netflix series knocks villains out of the park.
I think because they're just allowed to do what they can't want.
Yeah, they are. They're allowed to show you the darkest part of a villain.
You're not going to see somebody bathing somebody on screen like that. Or somebody.
Yep.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. Okay. So, next part, I want to talk about Curtis, and who is a friend of Frank's from his military service. And Curtis.
Never mind. I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about the other person.
No. Curtis is like. So Curtis is Frank's best friend for the most part, and he's the only other person outside of the Daredevil family that know that Frank's still alive. And Curtis has used his out-of-military experience to put on a support group for veterans who have come home and don't know what to do. And in this scene, in Curtis's scenes, you get to see this sense of not belonging that a lot of veterans feel, and you get to hear a lot of talk and explanation of that pain. Curtis himself is an amputee. There are people who have various physical and mental wounds from war in his circle, and out of Curtis you get this subplot which is intense and has probably hit me more than even the stuff that I saw in Jessica Jones. But you have the subplot with Lewis, who is a young, I think he's like in his 20s, and he's come back and he doesn't fit anywhere, and he's having the severe PTSD where he ends up building a trench in his backyard and living out there because he can't adjust to civilian life. And
but he's also so damaged where they can't go back.
Exactly. He's too damaged that nobody will take him. Yes. And that's really solidified. And I actually think this is one of the points where I liked Billy, is because he attempts to go to the mercenary organization, or it's a military contracting organization, right, which is pretty much mercenaries, that Billy owns, Anvil. And he goes there, and Billy gives them this speech. And that speech was really, it kind of really shook me. Because in the speech, he talks about how, like, we train you to do something, and then you come back, and we don't accept you when you come back, and you can't use those skills that we gave you, and you have no place to fit. Let me give you a place to fit. And while Lewis is trying out, you know, for this, you see that Lewis genuinely has empathy for people, because he's trying to help that guy next to him do the pull-ups and get into the training, and then it ends up that, like, because he is so mentally damaged, he can't go back. He can't do anything.
Well, I don't know per se about that. Because he actually seems like he actually excels when they're doing this whole training thing. He's actually excelling real well. And it depends on, you can tell he's damaged and he probably shouldn't go back. But literally, they would have taken him if Curtis actually doesn't ask for a favor.
That's right, yeah. Because Curtis ends up, so Curtis also knows Billy, because he was also in the service with them. And Curtis ends up telling Billy, hey, this is this guy, this is his damage.
Yeah.
You should not let this guy in.
Right.
And so Lewis ends up getting cut from the program and starts into a spiral where he meets, I don't remember his name, but he's like the stereotype that you see of, and like somebody who's trying to incite people to, I mean, I don't, does anybody, I don't know how to really explain this character.
He's like your stereotypical, like, if, you know, NRA, you know, the government is out to get you,
yeah,
kind of guy.
Government,
right?
Conspiracies, they don't, you know, the government doesn't love you, your guns are all you have.
Yeah, exactly.
And
they turned out to be a goddamn phony, which I loved.
Yes.
That was amazing.
Yes.
I will say, like, we can probably get in more, but I do love that they take some of this, like, that stereotypical character, but they do show, not just, because some, yeah, they not only just show him, per se, on one end of the spectrum, but then they also seem a broad end to where they get to the other stereotypical side later in the show on the other side of the spectrum.
Yeah, so, like, in this character, we start to see that this show, which uses a lot of guns, is actually talking about, like, the issues with guns in the U.S., and they do try to balance it by showing you both stereotypes. But the reason this guy is important is because Lewis takes to him and really buys into the narrative that this guy is selling, because to Lewis, he's seeing a man who is treated like crap after Vietnam. He served and wasn't respected, and now that's exactly the plight that Lewis is going through. Come to find out, the guy never actually served in the military, or at least on the battlefield. And this sets Lewis off, and he kills him.
Which kind of bugs me at least a little bit of, in the sense of, why would you not, like, I mean, I guess with all this information now, it did, like, the Curtis, like, here's his records and his look.
Yeah.
Because it bugged me that as much as he took for him, he didn't actually look for himself, I guess.
Yeah, which I think the reason he doesn't look for himself is because he's just looking for somebody to be with.
I know.
And so it takes that outside force, because Curtis sees the danger that this guy can put Lewis in. Like, Curtis knows that this guy is on the edge. Curtis knows that Lewis is on the edge. And so Curtis is trying to do everything he can to pull him back. And it doesn't go that way, because once he has been denied by Anvil, lied to by him, and in his mind, lied to by Curtis, and hurt by Curtis, he has nowhere to turn.
So, based on this, I mean, because we know what ends up going around and stuff, and at least from watching the training, should they try to save him or just let him go back?
I think that's the question. Overall. Which I don't know the answer.
Because, I mean, just watching him train and watching him act and everything, I know he was damaged, per se, but when civilian life, he literally was living in a ditch in his yard.
But I think...
And then he actually excelled with people, and you see this...
But I think that's why they showed that, because you can't just keep sending people back to that. Like, I think it's trying to point out the fact that as a system and as a country, we don't do enough to help veterans actually make that transition to be able to live a civilian life. It was trying to point out the fact that there aren't enough Curtises to actually help people that are making that transition. And so that's why I think they don't let him go back. Because I think the thing to take away is we should actually reach out and try to help these people transition versus just keeping...
Well, based on everything else, could they actually do more for Lewis?
I just think Curtis needed more. Like, Curtis had nowhere to send him to. Well, like, I know, it was but just I, Curtis I, handling yeah. him. There's no institution to help him. The VA wasn't helping him. There is nothing large that will help him. It was Lewis by himself trying to save somebody who hit the point where he didn't want to be saved. And I think that's the problem, like, ultimately.
Right.
Like, one Lewis isn't going to save... Curtis needs help saving somebody. Like, Curtis needs an institution to fall back on. Curtis needs more people to fall back on the help. It was fruitless. And it was probably one of the most touching and terrifying things to see, because after Lewis kills the NRA stereotype guy, he ends up going on pretty much a spree where he's sending bombs and there are explosions, and he sees himself as becoming Frank. He sees himself as being a punisher, but he's punishing the big government and everything like that. Like, he is embodying the Unabomber and all those things, and he ends up writing to Karen Page because Karen Page has written about Frank and has pointed that Frank is human and Frank is not a bad guy, and so he immediately thinks that she's going to support him. When that doesn't happen, he ends up losing it completely. And this is where you get what Matt brought up earlier, the stereotype of the other person who doesn't want any guns. Because Karen and he's like a senator or a congressman. He's a senator who is against any sort of carry and any sort of gun. And he's sitting there and they're debating, and Karen's kind of working this middle ground where, like, there is a limit, but at the same time, like, I have a concealed carry permit. I personally have these things. And we have this dialogue, which is, it's way better than anything Arrow did with it. And it's probably more nuanced than a lot of the conversations we get about gun violence and gun rights in a lot of media. And it ends up not only showing the NRA guy as a fraud, but also showing the anti-gun guy as a fraud, because he ends up... relying on these mercenaries to save him because Lewis is out to get him.
Yes, he ends up hiring Billy. Yeah.
That wasn't necessarily his point, though. Like, he didn't want to get rid of all guns. Like, he says, it's not about taking all guns away from all people. It's about taking all guns away from the wrong people.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, he wasn't, like, against, like, concealed carry. But his carry's, like, knock of, like, look at these mercenaries guys next to you, you dick. Yeah. Like, those are probably the wrong people.
Yeah.
Well, because I know...
Yeah, I like Curtis, though. That whole subplot is really good. I think a lot of the time, some of these subplots can really take away from the main story in these, you know, not just, like, Marvel shows, but just kind of, like, shows in general, right? But this subplot... You know, everything you talked about from Curtis to Lewis to the senator, all of that stuff, all these minor characters making up that whole that subplot is super good. Like, I was invested in that as I was in the main story. And I think a lot of that has to do with mainly Curtis being badass. Like, they took, like, a minor character from the comics and made him,
yeah.
I would imagine, a fan favorite easily just because of how well they handled his character.
He's definitely one of my
favorites.
I will
say the senator, as much as it was talking with Karen, it was more with his interaction with Billy where he was really challenged in his hypocrisy.
Yeah. A lot of good social commentary plus good, you know,
good
moments.
Great writing and great characters. Yeah. I think, too, like, one of the things... so, like, I love Curtis, and what happens is Curtis ends up finding out that it's Lewis before Frank does, and Curtis confronts Lewis, and they have this fight, and Curtis is winning, and he is probably going to win, and then Lewis pretty much beats him with his prosthetic. And so when Frank finds Curtis, they have this exchange, and Curtis is a broken man. Like, the first thing he says to Frank is, like, if I was complete, like, you know, this wouldn't have happened to me. You know, I could have done this. And, like, he has to deal with the fact that his disability was used against him. And he ends up, while Frank is there and they're trying, because Lewis has strapped a bomb to him and they're trying to disarm it, they're having this conversation where Curtis just keeps saying, like, you know, I'm not fixed. Like, I feel all of this. I feel everything that, you know, that this guy's felt. And he wishes that he had died on the battlefield versus to be in the position where he's completely helpless because he came back without a leg. And it is some of the most, like, potent commentary on those issues of coming back and staying and, like, how people feel. That, like, it was crazy. It was so good. It was so, so good. Ultimately, Frank does win out, and he ends up, with probably the most powerful moment of Frank's interaction with people is Lewis has locked himself in a fridge in the hotel, and Frank is on the outside, and Frank pretty much talks him into committing suicide.
He tells him, like, go out like a soldier, is what he says, something along those lines.
Yeah.
Well, because he basically said that what you've done, as much as whatever happened to you, you've basically ruined your entire family.
Yeah. And what happens is there's this scene where you see both of them and you see the door between them, and you realize that, like, not only is Frank mirrored by somebody like Matt Murdock or even Billy, but he's also mirrored in this guy. This Lewis tried to become Frank in a way, and that type of mental break is something that Frank was and is really close to, I think, personally. And having him talk him into killing himself is probably one of the most, like, I had to stop watching after that episode for a little bit because it was really deep and it was really big, and gosh.
I can see why they delayed the show on
Comic-Con. Yeah, so New York Comic-Con, right after the Las Vegas shooting, they decided to remove their panel from the lineup and not promote at New York Comic-Con. And I think that the storyline is definitely why.
I was wondering how, because I wasn't a fan of, like, when they did decide to do this, and I didn't know exactly, because I knew Punisher, violence, this is what happens, et cetera, et cetera. But seeing exactly this whole, like, I guess it was subplot arc over these, like, I think it's episodes basically 7 through 8, or 6 through 8 or so, that happens, you could totally see, like, out of all things, yeah, I can get on board with why you pulled that.
Yeah. I guess, I mean, did I miss anybody? I think that's pretty much the bulk
also
of
the funniest
people.
Thing about the NRA guy is when the cop shows up, which also shows the interaction between the cops with one
yeah.
that happened to the courthouse, and two, the interaction between basically Billy and the other detective in the room during the senator thing, I think are actually very...
Can you explain that?
So one, basically they're protesting on the courthouse or semi-protesting. I don't know. They're handing out flyers and the cop says leave and they're like spooting out like, you can't do this. This is the law section, blah, blah. And the cop basically like, I make the law, leave, do this. The NRA guy basically walks away and leaves Lewis to get arrested. Because Lewis fights and basically...
But Lewis doesn't fight. Like, that's the important thing.
He doesn't fight. I meant, like, he's actually just saying, I don't have to leave. This is the law. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. And then he's manhandled by
manhandled, beaten by the police, thrown to the ground by the police and arrested. While the other guy just walks away like nothing happens. Your first sign that you're like, this NRA guy
is... This guy is all talk.
Yeah. Then when they're in the hotel, there are two problems I have with the cops. One, they always seem to... This was the same detective from Daredevil Season 2 in which he dealt with Frank, in which everybody actually points this out during this entire show. But this whole time, he basically presumes Frank is a bad guy, and this is exactly what happened according to this senator, basically without any evidence, without any cause, and basically using any prior knowledge of actually dealing with Frank, which was a total disregard for everything. Yeah. And then, which was kind of very disturbing, did not like that at all. But then the interaction between Billy... and the cop, I find are interesting because we have this, yes, these interactions between, I guess, this whole cop becoming, or military people becoming cops, and this whole mentality of taking, in which Billy basically says, like, the cop's like, this is a total, like, failure, people are dead and everything else, this is how we do it, and Billy basically responds with, where I come from and what I do, basically the target's alive, casualties die, and people die all the time, this is success in our book, this is what we expect. Yeah. And it's just, like, a totally different perspective.
Yeah, because I think ultimately it kind of talked to, like, the militarization of the police force. And I don't think it was talking about, like, the... Like, I don't think that it necessarily was saying that cops don't face difficulties because they do. But I think, like, what that was trying to do was say, like, it is different than being in the military and somebody who is on a mission in the middle of a war zone where you have to accept that death is a possibility and you just have to get the job done.
You don't even accept it's a possibility. You just basically know it's a guarantee. The whole point is you have to get, as long as you get what you're supposed to, you expect, you know, only 7 of 10 are returning.
Yeah.
And that's still a success.
Yeah. Which is really tough.
Again proves that Billy still at some point in this show is really like it always does. But yes.
I guess overall, what are your guys' thoughts? Like, I think I got everybody. Did I miss anybody?
I mean, we didn't talk about, like, Rollins and, like, Sarah Lieberman, but, like, I think they're just stereotypical background characters. I don't think they really deserve.
Yeah.
Not that they don't deserve it, but, like, I don't think we need to spend time talking about that.
Okay.
To be honest, I don't think it really adds anything. Like, Rollins is just, like, the crazy, you know, crooked government guy. And then Sarah Lieberman's kind of,
who Frank took his eye.
Yeah.
Rollins is the mastermind.
He was there to get his face bashed in, so.
Huh?
He said he was there to get his face bashed in.
Pretty much.
That's all we got to say about that.
Yeah. It was because, again, he was the side villain, not the main villain. Yeah. And he didn't really do much as a side villain. Billy pretty much did all of his stuff for him.
No, he was technically the main villain that was supposed to die for villain. Billy to become the main villain.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I guess, how do we wrap up? I mean, overall, like, what do you guys think? Like, what do you walk away with this? Like what do you walk away with from this series?
I think it's really good. Like, I think it's just so different from the other shows, to be honest. Like, in terms of just the character it's portraying is just, like, a lot different than Jessica Jones. It's a lot different than Daredevil. So, like, I don't know how I would really rank it. I think it's my favorite. Like, that's how I walk away. Like, I walk away thinking it's my favorite. But it's also been so long since I've seen Daredevil. But it's really good. Like, I didn't walk away from this like I walked away from Defenders or how I walked away from Luke Cage. Like, I didn't really have very many problems with the show outside of, like, Karen Page being annoying. Like, it's pretty solid. And I'm just so surprised that, like, you know, Metacritic, it's like 56 out of 100.
Oh, God.
This is?
Yeah. I think, like, Rotten Tomatoes, it's like 61%. Like, I just don't understand, like, where the problems of the show are coming from.
Yeah.
Because I think it's one of the best Marvel Netflix shows that's out right now. Like, how good it is. Lots of social commentary. The characters are great. It's well written. Like, it's everything I wanted from when you asked in the beginning of the, you know, the episode what I wanted to get out of it, this is what I wanted to get out of it. You know, that's, yeah. It gave me the show I was hoping for.
Yeah. So, one, I think, at least from basically Christian people, I know some people have a problem with the violence. I don't know what they were expecting.
Yeah,
some
that's what I was going to say. Like,
some people are stupid.
Like, I've gone on, like, a few, like, when I was watching this, I went on a few rants on Twitter about this. But I know that, like, some people were worried that this was going to be, like, the stereotype of what, like, of what a mass shooter is. Like, just an angry dude with a gun, and that's all he's going to be. And I think that Frank Castle is far from that. And I think that they did a good job of distinguishing what that, like, mass, what a mass shooter, mass killer is in Lewis versus what Frank is, and detaching him from that narrative of violence for the sake of violence or violence for destructive purposes. I think they did a good job of putting that in a pocket and leaving it there and letting Pat and letting Frank shine outside of that.
Yeah, well, you can clearly see that one, like, as you're talking about between the Lewis and Frank, that is a very thin line. It's also very interesting how much Frank really hates bombs.
Oh, yeah.
Because that was out of one thing that was, like, the, he, like, set him off more than, it, like, may not warn anything, obviously.
Because he calls Lewis a coward,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he literally hates bombs. As much as, like, artillery he uses and everything else, he literally hates bombs. But besides the fact of the violent part of, like, I think could possibly lead to people not liking this, which I don't understand, because it's what we call the Punisher, and we know what to expect. The only thing I will say when I first got done watching this and what I thought of this is, like, what I kind of wanted Luke Cage to be like. Because I thought there's parts of Luke Cage that were just extremely boring, and there's literally no action whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So the writing's well done, but to me it's just kind of very boring and drags along for, like, almost a drama, not really, like, a superhero show. This show has parts of that where this show can be kind of very boring. The writing's well done, but there's really not a lot going on and boring. But when the show does kick into, like, its action, or like the scene in the very first show, this hyper-violent thing, it comes on, and it comes on very, very well. Yeah. And so you can see why this show is what it is. Whereas Luke Cage, it would go from this whole, like, boring, like, storytelling thing and then never really seem to kick up into that next gear of, like, why this show was a superhero. Or at least that's what the first thing I thought about watching. Yeah. I really enjoyed both of them. I like this one, obviously, a lot better. But Luke Cage, I thought, was, like, extremely boring with no parts. Whereas this one, I said the first episode was boring. But that whole last 3 minutes of it, you're like, I think that was cool. That was worth
it. Yeah. I think overall, like, my main thing from here, it gave me exactly what I wanted when it came to showing, like, Frank's dealing with trauma. Because John Barenthal, or however you pronounce his last name, was meant to be Frank Castle. And oh my God, does he act his ass off. Like, he is so good. And there are these scenes that happen where it's not necessarily a flashback so much as it's what's happening in the moment. And Angel and Adrian kind of mentioned this when he talked about the home scene. All of these are happening in Frank's head. And there are, like, hallucinations that he has where he's having a moment of post-traumatic stress where he's seeing his family. And there's this one specific moment where he's at the, I guess, like, a Thanksgiving table with his family and the Liebermans, and they're enjoying it, and he has this huge smile on his face, and then the CIA bursts in to kill everybody, and his face switches from this huge smile into this, like, pained expression where he's just freaking out. And, like, the type of, like, visual acting that John Barenthal gives you with his delivery of lines and everything else, like, it's perfect. It is perfect in the scenes that are happening in Frank's head, and it's perfect in the scenes that are happening with everybody else. Like, I loved you, Thomas Jane, but John Barenthal's the Punisher for me, like, hands down. Like, that's what I walked away with. Like, he can act. Oh my God, he can act. And I also really want to hear, like, the perspective of somebody who's been in the military and has watched this show. Like, I want to see how, like, what they take away from the Punisher, because they do hit a lot on those issues that veterans would deal with. I guess ranking wise, Punisher's my favorite one. It blows everything out of the water for me because it gives me the drama in writing superiority that Luke Cage says, like Matt did, and the action of Daredevil. Like, it's a nice little marry between them, like you said. Like, it's balanced. I get super deep writing I don't get anywhere else, and I get some really great fight scenes that I don't get anywhere else. And the social commentary is a plus for me. So this is like my top out of all the Marvel stuff. What about for you? What about for you?
Oh, I mean, it's up there. I mean, it's not my favorite, but it's definitely better than like Iron Fist, The Defenders, and
Well, those Cage. Two are pretty low.
I mean, I guess it'd be second. I mean, I like Daredevil season one first, and then this one might be up there right next to it.
Yeah,
it's probably about where I'm at with Matt. Like, I think I like Daredevil more being kind of like the... Not like the originator, because, like, didn't Jessica Jones come out before Daredevil?
No. Daredevil was the very first one.
I think that's why I like Daredevil. Like, I think it hit all that stuff way before, and nothing until this has caught up to, I think, Daredevil season one, so...
Right. That's accurate, yeah.
This is good because we have it. We have Daredevil season one to compare it to. And without that, we wouldn't be able to say, you know, how good Punisher is. So, I'd say solid two, and it's not by it's close.
Yeah, I was just surprised this blew Jessica Jones out of it for me because I love Jessica Jones. But yeah, okay, so that's it. Everybody, go watch it. I don't know how to end it. We have to put. I think you can find the podcast at But Why Though PC on Instagram and Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/ButWhyThoughPC, and head on over to our Patreon, patreon.com/ButWhyThoughPC, and you can get episodes a day early, some extra clips that we cut out because we talk too much, or I guess I talk too much.
You talk too much.
And you do get merch and some, you know, special holiday cards from me. Written with all my love. So check that out. As always, you can find me at Oh My Myth Randier on Instagram and Twitter. Adrian?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at SuperReese93, SuperReuiz93.
Matt?
You can find me on the Twitter at DatM18, DATTM18.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
I had a good home and a laugh. I had a good home and I left. Right, death. That big fucking bomb made me deaf, deaf. A homebeam mechanic put his Kevlar on wrong. I guarantee you'll meet up at the suicide bomb. Hell broke loose. Hell broke loose. Ditches in the middle of the road. You pay $100 just for filling in the hole. Listen to the general every goddamn